Next item, please, Carla.
Item 233, amend the Arts, Education, and Access Income Tax to end administrative cost limitation, place cost limitation under City Council oversight, and direct the Revenue Division to work with the Arts, Education, and Access Fund Citizen Oversight Committee to increase the poverty level exemption.
Colleagues, the arts tax was passed by voters to provide funding for art in our schools and to support arts institutions. Today's action is aimed at fixing an issue with the administrative cap to ensure that we're collecting the funds that voters intended go to the arts. Today's action also looks at raising the poverty level exemption to make sure that the arts tax are affordable to everyone. These fixes will increase the compliance rate, and by potentially increasing the poverty level exemption, will decrease the impact of the arts tax on low-income individuals. I'd like to particularly thank Commissioners Fish and Udaly for their very hard work on this issue. I'd like to start by turning this over to Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor, and I want to thank both you and Commissioner Udaly for co-sponsoring this ordinance for consideration. In the 6 years since this tax was overwhelmingly adopted by Portland voters, it has been amended by the Council 4 times. Today, as the elected representatives of the people, we are proposing 2 additional changes that will make the tax more progressive by directing the Arts Oversight Committee, our community oversight body, to work with us to exempt more low-income Portlanders, and would give the Council the discretion through a transparent public process to decide how much work the city puts into collections of the tax from non-payers. I'd like to make a note about the words we're using here because they matter. Collection activity is fundamentally different than the cost of administration. The arts tax is the only tax, fee, bond, or levy that I can think of that we have to go out and collect. Other revenue sources are assessed as part of another bill and paid automatically. And to be fair, the actual administrative costs associated with the arts tax is minimal, mostly consisting of managing contracts with the school districts and distributing money to local arts organizations, not hiring professional staff people, not producing glossy brochures, not sending out annual reports to the community. Certainly nowhere near the 5% cap that was originally contemplated. So in my view, it's just not accurate to equate the cost of collections with the cost of administration. They are 2 separate things. Back to today's action. I believe these 2 updates are reasonable. And in fact, one has been proposed by the Revenue Bureau with the concurrence of the Arts Oversight Body, our citizen-led oversight body. And further, I think it makes sense to consider these 2 items in tandem. We know that making the tax more progressive shrinks the pool of eligible taxpayers, and that potentially shrinks the projected revenue. If we retain the limit on collection activity, knowing that the denominator is shrinking, we are effectively telling people they're off the hook for paying their fair share. That's not fair, and that's not what the voters intended, and it's not good policy. And I'm pleased that we're addressing these issues today. Thank you.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. I have an amendment to introduce. It's a joint amendment between Commissioner Fish and I. Here is the exact language. Change Directive B to read, the Council directs the Revenue Division to work with the AOC to recommend an increase of at least but not limited to 2x the current poverty level exemption to make the tax more equitable and bring recommendations for implementation back to City Council by September 1st, 2018. That's the
second.
Thank you.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Udaly. And we have a second from Commissioner Fish. Do we have further discussion on the amendment? Why don't we go ahead and leave the amendment open, and we'll take our testimony, and then we can come back and close it.
Okay.
Very good. Is there any further? Did you want to make a presentation?
Yes, just brief. I have some brief remarks about this. Thank you very much, Mayor. I'm Thomas Lanham. I'm the Revenue Division Director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. And Commissioner Fish, I appreciated your distinction between administration and collection costs. It's a very important one, and one that's lost, I think, in the larger conversation about the cost limitation. So this ordinance before you today ends the 5% cost limitation for the Arts Education and Access income tax and replaces it with City Council oversight. It directs the Revenue Division to work with the Arts Tax Oversight Committee to recommend an increase in the poverty exemption level and with the amendment to 200% or more. To date, the Revenue Division has collected over $51 million in tax revenue at a cost of a little over $4 million, or about 8% of the revenue. Over $46 million has been dispersed to school districts and the Regional Arts and Culture Council since 2013. These tax dollars support almost 60 kindergarten through fifth grade teachers for the last 5 years, as well as local public schools, as well as dozens of local arts organizations. The cost limitation was originally conceived to provide voters with assurances that the tax would be efficiently collected. While efficient collection is certainly a desirable goal, in this case, it has had the unintended consequence of working against an even more important goal, which is maximizing the revenue yield. The cost limitation works against our efforts to maximize the revenue yield because it limits the amount we can spend to 5 cents for every dollar collected. Spending 10 cents to collect the next dollar makes perfectly good business sense, but the current city code prohibits us from doing that. The inability to remain under the cost limitation has sometimes been publicly framed as an indication that the program itself is inefficient. Nothing could be further from the truth. With 4.5 budgeted FTE, employees maintaining 500,000 taxpayer accounts, that's over 100,000 accounts per employee, and the arts tax is actually one of the most efficient revenue collection programs in the city by an order of magnitude. Most of those programs, for example, Water Bureau collections or other collection programs within the Revenue Division, average 5,000 to 12,000 accounts per FTE. Put another way, if the tax rate was $70 per person instead of $35, this program would have met the 5% cost limitation. So the inability to meet the 5% cost limitation is really more indicative of the low revenue per taxpayer rather than inefficiency. It's also important to note that we cannot cut the budget to meet the 5% cost limitation without losing revenue because almost the entire budget is tax collection positions and printing and postage for tax notifications to taxpayers. So cutting collection positions for tax notifications will set up a negative feedback loop as taxpayers increasingly realize there are no consequences for failure to pay. As noted earlier, the Arts Tax Oversight Committee has endorsed this recommendation, and I'll wrap up there and ask for any comments that you may have or questions.
Thomas, I just have one question. I've been trying to think about what's the true apples-to-apple comparison of this tax. And I guess one way of looking at this is the compliance rate for state and federal tax collections. Do we know in Portland or Multnomah County what the current collection rate is for state and federal taxes?
Not specific to the county. The IRS does publish nationwide statistics. The all-in compliance rate following enforcement is around 85.7 or 8% for the IRS for personal income taxes. So
that's the national standard for the IRS.
That's correct. And the IRS, as you know, has substantial enforcement tools that we do not have.
And we are currently collecting about 75%?
That's correct, 74.
So I know I've heard the argument made by some that because we're not collecting 100%, it somehow shows some kind of it is indicative of broader public sentiments about the tax. According to the data you just supplied us, that the true benchmark is probably what the federal compliance rate is, which is 85%. And is it your plan over time to lift 75% closer to 85%?
That's correct, and this change today will help us do that. I don't know that we ever get to 85%. We are, for example, never going to garnish someone's wages for the arts tax. Just doesn't seem reasonable for the amount of money that we're talking about. The IRS certainly would do that, so that's going to help their compliance rate remain higher than ours. That said, I think 80% remains a reasonable goal as we continue to use a number of collection tools such as collection agencies, IRS, federal taxpayer information that we now have, and some other methods, other steps that we're taking internally.
Well, I'm really pleased to have this clarification because I once worked for an elected official whose favorite expression was, compared to what? And I think when you're debating something, you have to define the field of that you're operating on, and you have to have a comparator. And it seems to me the apple-to-apple comparison here is the federal federal income tax compliance rate. And we've built our compliance rate up to 75%. Your next milestone is to get it to 80%. And under this proposal, annually, we'd be reviewing not only your progress towards that goal, but how much we think is a reasonable amount of revenue to be dedicated to further collections. And we would do that in a transparent public process. So I appreciate the clarification.
Thank you.
May I ask a question with regard to the poverty rate exemption? How would you expect that to interact with the compliance rate?
Well, that's a great question. It's complicated. So right now, approximately 1 in 7 Portland adults is in poverty and therefore qualifies for that exemption. If we were to double down on the exemption, that moves to approximately, that number would be about one-third. The question would be, what is the compliance rate between people that are at 100% of poverty, in other words, just barely are expected to file and pay, and 200%? And that's something that we're just going to have to look at. I don't have the answer today.
Very good. And I just want to state for the record that there is an integrity issue here. The taxpayers passed this, voters, more correctly, passed this. People are subjected to it. They subjected themselves to it. They said they wanted support for arts education, and they are getting that. That part of the program seems to be very efficient. They've also said they wanted support for arts institution because collections are lower than anticipated. That part of the promise has really not been fulfilled. And there was also the promise to keep the administrative rates in check. And now that this program has been around long enough, it is obvious that the cost of compliance is greater than originally anticipated as a portion of the overall pool of revenues. And while there is no question that some will take this as the opportunity to say, this proves that the program doesn't work, I would dispute that. I would say that the program works. It does not work as well as originally proffered or anticipated. But one of the problems that we are clearly running up against is the administrative overhead is too low to actually have the kind of enforcement mechanism put into place to ensure that there is fairness in this policy and that we are collecting the revenues that are due as a result of what the voters asked for. And so I see this as a movement, towards transparency and integrity in terms of what it actually costs to administer this program. So while we are undoubtedly going to take some lumps for it, I think fixing it is the right thing to do rather than either avoiding that difficult conversation or scrapping the program altogether. I don't think the public wants us to scrap it. I think they want us to fix it and be responsible about it and be transparent in terms of the approach that we take. So
Mayor,
I'm glad to support this. Commissioner Fish.
And I know that Commissioner Daly's in the queue, but if I may, because I want to just riff off of something the mayor just said. There are a whole host of additional checks and balances that are built into our system, which you ought to acknowledge. Number one, there have been multiple occasions where anyone who felt that the arts tax was either not warranted or did not approve of any action taken by the council could have referred that to a vote of the people. That system is prescribed. That has not happened. The fact that there are so few people in the audience today, I think, gives us some other sense about how people generally feel about this issue. But I want to make a broader point. Legislative bodies in Oregon routinely do changes to matters that are initially referred to the voters for permission and then exercise their lawful obligation or duty to fix something. And the last example, the biggest example I can think of is Measure 91, which was a very controversial item, had to do with cannabis. People had strong views on either side, but once the voters gave the permission to move forward, the Oregon legislature made substantial changes to the law within its purview to make the system work better. And I'm just guessing here, it's an educated guess, that the loudest critics of that action were probably people who voted no on the underlying ballot measure, and the softest voices, or the voices of approval, were probably those people that supported the underlying ballot measure and thought the legislature's changes made it work better. That's my guess, but I think that it generally, people who are opposed at the beginning to these kinds of things continue to find grounds to object. And that's fine. That's principled. I object from the beginning. I voted against it. I continue to object. But we have a well-established practice in this state of legislative bodies exercising their lawful purview of fixing things that the voters have adopted through a legislative process that was referred to them. And to those who say somehow that's undemocratic, I cry foul. The system allows for that. And frankly, if we didn't have that check and balance, we'd be referring a lot of stuff to the voters that simply would not be appropriate for their consideration. So I want to just observe that.
Commissioner Udale.
Following up on what Commissioner Fish has just said, we've seen a lot of changes in our city over the past 5 or 6 years since this policy was passed, and $15,000, which is the current exemption, is worth a lot less in today's housing market. So I just want to go on record as saying I absolutely support increasing the exemption to 200%, which is a common threshold for many means tested or needs-based programs. But I'm also interested in looking at a higher exemption, given that an individual would have to make 3 times the poverty level to actually afford to live in our city. That being said, I'm also very interested in the possibility of this becoming a more progressive tax that's based on income, and that's something that we haven't talked about today, and I realize we don't have the capability of doing that now, but once our Revenue Bureau system is connected with the federal system, I believe that will be a possibility. Do you have any comments or thoughts on that?
No, those are very good comments, and I think so. When we think of an income tax, I think typically we think of the federal or state income taxes that we all pay or that we all better be paying have, you know, a table, right, that you will use to map your income to a particular tax amount. And so we can't do that now for a range of reasons administratively. We could do it, but it would be prohibitive, cost prohibitive to run such a program. But once we get our tax administration database is up and running, and we believe that should happen in the early 2020s. There's no hard date yet. Then we should be able to do that.
Great. I had one more comment, but I think I've forgotten, so thank you. Well, actually, I'm going to be very interested in seeing how our compliance rate changes once that exemption is put in place. I have a feeling it'll be noticeable, at least, if not significant.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. Public testimony. Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you.
So we have 2 people signed up. Please come on up. Arne Strasser and Mary Sipe.
Good afternoon. 3 minutes. Name for the record, please. We do not need your address.
Arne Strasser. Art is about life, color, freedom. Art should not be represented by a dull, bureaucratic form that looks like every tax bill, which is what the current tax bill looks like. The whole process has a negative, punitive air to it, and certain aspects of this what you've built that you're just discussing has also a punitive aspect to it, whatever its other merits. Look at the mailings of another city agency. The recycling program regularly mailed graphic, easy-to-read brochures and a program with high compliance and few complaints. What we receive instead is an envelope addressed to city resident that contains a form without any artistic feeling to it at all that asks us to list the members of our family and their social security numbers, and we're supposed to drop this highly sensitive information into a mailbox. No wonder compliance is low. The city already knows who we are. Why isn't the envelope addressed to us personally? The tax program needs to be redesigned from top to bottom. Get artists involved. Produce colorful, artistic materials that will help people understand why the tax is important and where the money goes. Completely change the way the program is administered. The arts tax program needs to reflect art, colorful and full of life, and it needs to be designed in a way that makes paying it a positive experience. Yes to an arts tax program that helps us appreciate the importance of art to the beauty and humanity of the city.
Thank you. I think it's a great idea. Appreciate that.
Sir, I think it's a brilliant idea, too. And, you know, it reminds me that we've actually made some progress updating the website, but we haven't gone so far as to update the form that we send out. I will tell you that no good deed goes unpunished. We recently had a council hearing in which we took up 20-something recommendations for making art spaces more accessible. And on the cover of that report, we put a picture of a child that had done a work of art and used face paint, and it was engaging and wonderful. And I got an email from someone saying it was a totally inappropriate picture, and it diminished the significance of the arts, that we shouldn't use children in that manner, blah, blah, blah. So everybody's a critic, but I believe what you've just put into the record and said is absolutely true. And you have our collective commitment that we will try to bring the values that you would like to see brought back into this program reflected in what we send the taxpayers. And I thank you for taking the time to share it with us.
It's a fair admonition that you raise, because the program really overall is part of a vision. It's part of a strategy, set of strategies around engagement around the arts and arts education and supporting arts institutions. But sometimes in government, we do think too narrowly. And we are thinking about this in this context as a revenue structure. And so I think your admonition is a really good one, because there's a larger brand and a larger vision that's part of this. So I appreciate your testimony. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name's Mary Scythe. Well, this is an interesting day in so many ways. One thing I want to do is give a shout out to the fact that it's International Women's Day, and go girl power. What's really interesting for me is that I feel like somebody's been looking over my shoulder. My testimony was almost word for word the amendment that you just presented regarding, scary. Has my email been hacked?
I assure you that I have always felt this way about the exemption level from the beginning, but right. You know, great minds.
Mary, the camera that's just above you when you're sitting back there actually rotates down so we get a closer look at what's on your...
Right, you're reading
we've read your
right
testimony.
Over my shoulder
you,
when I
if
come every
If you give
week.
Us the short yeah. version, we've already read your testimony.
Yeah. But, you know, it is... I feel so validated. You know, a year ago this month, I started coming every week to the city council meetings, and I did that for a number of reasons. Little did I expect that you would really hear as loud and clear as you have the many comments that I've made over this past year. And I just, you know, this is just such a perfect example to me of how becoming involved in our city government or any government whatsoever, actively involved, and coming and speaking before you and learning how the city works. How, you know, literally, I'm just cannot believe how absolutely what you've done here follows exactly to the T what my concerns were about putting some teeth into the wording of the ordinance in relationship to expanding the exemption and even right down to, you know, because my thoughts were, you know, like people that are eligible for food stamps, people whose only source of income is Social Security or SSI, people living in affordable housing, you know, that somehow you could word this so that it would encompass all of that in a very simple manner. And that's exactly what you've done with this amendment, and I just can't say enough about how appreciative I am to have a city council that really is listening and really accepting the feedback that comes before them, and really also reaching out for that feedback as well. And I just say thank you.
My staff pay you to come say this today?
I was teasing Carla earlier that I should be on the payroll. I'm here every week. But, you know, bottom line is this, I'm really encouraged to see the amendment that you've put out here and the ordinance. And thank you.
Well, Mary, thank you. And you started coming about the same time I took over as presiding officer of this council. And I've been very frank with people. I've told people this is a very difficult job.
Yep.
It is much harder than I expected it to be for a lot of obvious reasons.
Harder than I ever thought it was.
And yeah, we live in a nation of critics, but it's, you know, it's a lot harder to actually have to weigh difficult choices and make decisions and fix things, move things in the right direction. And you have not always agreed with everything we've done, but I have always appreciated the feedback and the input that you've provided. You've always come very, very well prepared. Your arguments are always germane. And so right back at you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is what the process is supposed to look like, is when engaged citizens such as yourself come forward and help us shape policy and move things in the right direction, and you help us make those tough decisions and draw lines where others are perfectly content just to sit back and be critics after the line has
exactly
already been drawn by others.
Yeah.
So thank you.
I urge everybody at home watching, get out of your house, come down here in person.
Commissioner Fritz.
Mary, when you first started coming, Ms. Seip, when you first started coming, you said to me that you felt you had seen people on television and the same people coming in and just yelling at us all the time, and that you wanted to remind us that there are other people out there who are not angry with what we're doing. Who are
the voice of reason.
Well, just, and
yeah.
So your presence, and I appreciate that you don't testify on every single item. You are very, if you have something, if you contribute, then you do, like today, something different. But otherwise, you are just quietly present. And it just reminds me that there are a lot of people out there. I recognize there's a lot of people out there who'd be like to come, have the time to come and yell at us as well. There's, there's a place for that as well. But thank you for representing probably a lot of people in Portland.
Thank you.
Very good. So let's take a vote on the amendment. I'm sorry, Thomas, you had another comment?
Yeah, just briefly. Thank
Certainly.
You, Mayor. So just in response to a couple of those comments, which I thought were very good comments, and they're accurate, right? We're sending out black and white form. There is a mention of what the tax dollars are purchasing, and also links to get more information about that. The cost limitation drives everything that we do, and you're about to fix that. So putting a colorful insert into this letter was never an option in the past. And now I think that's something that we should look at. We should work with RAC potentially to design something like that, so something that's a little more clear about where the tax dollars go. And then in terms of the resident at addressing, that was another deliberate decision that cut about 100,000 pieces of mail out of our mailer and then saved $50,000 more. So, you know, again, we may be able to take a look at different options going forward now that we're not constantly constrained by this cost limitation.
So, Thomas, I'm not the mayor, but I am the president of the council. So somewhere in the charter it gives me some authority. And I'm appointing an ad hoc committee of Commissioner Udaly and me to work with you on some recommendations for redesign. And I will tell you, one of the things that I got in the mail recently that kind of set the bar was I got my monthly bus pass in a nondescript envelope. But when I opened it, there was a mailer that updated me and everyone else on the fact we had moved to a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. And it had some information. It was in orange. It was high impact. I could not avoid it. I read it. I think inspired by those kinds of things, I think we can come up with something that addresses the very valid concern the gentleman raised. And we can use each bill to drive a broader message about the pride we should all take in supporting arts education in our schools.
Right. In fact, that's an example of the ways that we try to save money. You got that PBOT mailer about the 20-mile-an-hour limit in an arts tax envelope. That's where the way...
Oh, it was an arts tax envelope?
Yes, it was, sir. So
I thought it was my bus tax.
No.
My bus pass. But either way.
Well, they may have done it several different ways. My point is that they also inserted in the arts tax bill, and that saved mailing costs as well, both for us and them. So
I agree that we need to do better public outreach. I do think at least some portion of that 25% of non-complying payers are just simply confused about the tax. Because it comes to sender, it may not reach them at the address that they actually reside at when the tax is due. They may think that it's per household and not per taxpayer. Okay. They may think that it has lumped in with other taxes that they've paid. So clarifying that boring stuff as well as maybe giving a little bit more splash to it. But, yeah, I mean, my question was who is going to pay for that, because we don't want to eat up a lot of money on a marketing campaign.
Commissioner, I'll just note, because I took out my phone and did the math, with all the imperfections of this tax, where our current compliance rate is at just under 90% of what the federal compliance rate is for a tax that's been around for 100 years. So I think we've got room to grow, but yeah. I think we should be proud that we're at 90%
absolutely
of what the federal government considers a benchmark.
Commissioner Fritz.
Commissioner Fisher, I'm feeling a little like chopped liver that I was left off the ad hoc committee, and I'd like to remind everybody that I did vote for this in the first place and went through a considerable amount of trouble defending it over the years. So I'd just like to add my commendations for these changes and also to have a little bit of a cautionary note that for everybody who comes in and says we should use more colour, we should give more information, we have people coming in saying you're wasting too much taxpayers' money. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that, knowing you as I do, Thomas, you are not going to be running amok and spending out 10-page glossy brochures with every tax bill, and that you will have a modicum of, you'll have a lot of restraint, because I know that that's what you do. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Saving money can also be beautiful.
It can.
Sorry, my former Treasury job is sneaking back in. So with that, let's call the roll on the amendment, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment is adopted. This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading as amended. Thank you, everybody.